Sounds True presents Peacemaking, Session 1 with Thich Nhat Hanh. Perhaps no one knows more about waging peace than the Vietnamese Buddhist monk, poet, and peace activist Thich Nhat Hanh. Thich Nhat Hanh began his public peacemaking efforts in the 1960s when he left the monastery with his fellow monks in order to rebuild villages destroyed by the war. In 1966, he arrived in the United States to speak out against the war and met Martin Luther King Jr., who would nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize. In the last days of the war, Thich Nhat Hanh was elected as chairman of the Vietnamese Buddhist Peace Delegation in Paris. Today, he leads a community of Buddhist activists in southern France at Plum Village. In this public lecture on peacemaking, he begins by helping us to understand our personal responsibilities for waging peace. Here's Thich Nhat Hanh.
Last time when I visited America, a friend of mine, she's a Buddhist, she told me that I should not grow letters. I should use my time to write more poems because she liked my poems. And she said, not many people can write poems like you do, but everyone can grow letters. Why do you waste your time growing letters? I said that, well, if I do not grow letters like this, I cannot write poems like this. Because we can distinguish between the time the artist does not create and the time when she or he creates. In fact, we are creating all the time because the period of time when we do not create, that period of time determines the value of the art created by the artist. It's like when you go to buy a necktie, you may have the impression that you are making a choice, standing in front of a row of neckties. But in fact, it is the necktie that makes the choice. You have been conditioned by many things. And now you present yourself before the necktie, and the necktie catches you. So creating is like that too, because it depends our way of life, our way of seeing things, our way of working, of resting, of being. Then when the moment comes, the work of art comes. And it does not come out of that moment only, it comes out from your way of life. It's like arranging flowers. You do not arrange flowers only when you arrange flowers. Because arranging flowers, you only need a few minutes, or maybe half an hour. But during the day, the way you look at things, the way you look at the trees, the flowers, the rocks, you treat people, you breathe, you smile, it has a very important effect on the way you arrange flowers. Therefore, you are arranging flowers all the day, and not just during the few minutes you are arranging the flowers. That is what I would call the non-dualistic way of arranging flowers. When you look at a rose, you might think of the rose as something very immaculate, very fresh, as something completely different from the garbage can. But if you look more carefully, you see that without a garbage can, there cannot be a rose. Without a rose, there cannot be a garbage can. In a few days, a rose can become part of a garbage can. And if you are a good organic gardener, in a few months, you have chrysanthemums and roses out of the garbage can. So if you are skillful in arranging garbage, and then you are a very good arranger of flowers. And vice versa. Arranging flowers, it has to do with many things like how to breathe, how to control your anger, how to treat a friend, and so on. And treating a flower, you treat like you treat a Buddha. And when you come to the garbage, you have to treat the garbage like you treat a Buddha. And therefore, no discrimination against the garbage in favor of the rose. That is the non-dualistic way of arranging flowers. I said that because of the way we deal with our own anger. Sometimes we think our anger is our enemy. That is something that comes from the outside. And we should fight it, we should suppress it, we should throw it out. Our anger is like our bombs. It is us. Our anger has a root in us, as well as our bombs have a root in us. The Buddhist teaching is that this is because that is. This is not because that is not. This is like this because that is like that. So if there is anger, it means something else is also as the origin of the anger. If the bombs are there, well, something is there also as our way of life, which has brought about the presence of the bombs. So if we want to deal only with the bombs, we want to throw the bomb away and keep the ghost of the bomb, that is not possible, because that ghost of the bomb is going to produce more bombs. Our anger is like that also. If we want to expel your anger, but the cause of our anger is still there, so it is going to produce more anger. I would like to share with you the way we deal with anger as a Buddhist. When we notice that there is anger in us, we refrain from saying things and doing things. Because saying things or doing things in that state of being is dangerous. It may cause damage that you will regret later. What you have to do by that time is just to breathe. Breathing in, I know that I'm angry. Breathing out, I know that I'm angry. Breathing in, I know that anger is still in me. Breathing out, I know that anger is still in me. Breathing in, I know that I am anger at this moment. Breathing out, I know that anger is me at this moment. You may ask, why? What is the use of doing so, breathing on your anger? There is a difference already between the two states of being. If you are angry and you do not know that you are angry, anger can be destructive. But once you are aware of your anger, once you have produced the awareness of your anger by breathing, then your anger is now sponsored by your awareness. You know, anger is like a flower. It is a zone of energy. It is there. And it has a deep roots within yourself and within society. And when it makes itself apparent, the first thing we have to do is to recognize it as it is. We should not try to suppress it. We should not try to evince it. We should only create our awareness to shine on it, to take care of it, the way you take care of your baby or your baby sister, your baby brother. Because of the awareness, that anger is yourself. That very anger is yourself. Again, non-duality. You and your anger are one. Of course, you want to identify yourself with something else like love, understanding, loving kindness. But anger is a part of ourselves. It's like the pen. You have this side and that side. or a stick, you have the right and the left. The right is there because the left is there. The left is there is because the right is there. Now, if you would like to eliminate the right, to conserve only the left, that is impossible to do. Because as soon as you cut this and you throw it away, this then become the right. And if you begin the operation, cut the half, and then you still have the right. So it's not possible to identify ourselves with only one side. So you have to accept that loving kindness, when it is there, it is you. But anger, when it is there, it is also you. That acceptance is the beginning. So you know that you are anger, and you have to take care, take good care of yourself, because anger is yourself. And you produce the awareness of breathing on your anger. Breathing in, I know that anger is there. Now, under the sponsorship of your awareness, of your breathing, a kind of transformation takes place immediately in the heart of the anger. You might not see it, but the very moment when you create awareness on your anger, there is a transformation taking place. It's like a flower, a tulip flower, a lotus flower. When the sun began to rise, it's still in this position. But if the sun continues to shine on the flower and penetrate into the flowers, there's something going on in the flower. And a few hours after, the flower opens up itself to the sun. The sun sees everything in here. The sun is not only visiting the outside. The sun is penetrating inside. So your awareness on your anger is not just observing as a pure observer. It produces some change within your anger, because your anger and your awareness interact. And if you maintain the awareness on your anger for some time, your anger will have to open itself to you, like the flower to the sun. And when you begin to see the roots of your anger, the nature of the anger, you'll be liberated from it. And that is what we call the salvation by understanding, the liberation by understanding. And this is the work of meditation. But you get to practice it every day in order to do it more easily when the event happens. If you try to practice it for the first time, it may be a little bit difficult because you are not used to it. But every time you are irritated, every time you are angered, and if you practice like that, and then you can deal with your anger more easily. First, you realize that your anger is yourself, non-duality. And therefore, we do not do violence to our anger, trying to suppress it. We should never do like that. And therefore, the method is non-violence. You have to deal with your anger in the most non-violent way possible, because of the very fact that your anger is yourself. To meditate is not to transform yourself into a battlefield, the good side fighting the evil, because you know that evil and good belong to the same reality in yourself. Non-duality leads to non-violence, dealing with your body with non-violence, dealing with your feelings with non-violence. We should avoid doing violence to our body and avoid doing violence to our feelings. And anger is a feeling. Anger is a feeling. And anger is a zone of energy. You cannot reduce that energy to nothingness. You can only transform that energy into another kind of energy. And you can do it by practicing awareness and to look deeply into the nature of your feeling. Meditation has two aspects. The first aspect is to stop, and the second aspect is to look. If we do not stop, we cannot look. We have to stop in order to generate that kind of attention, that kind of concentration. And with that kind of attention and concentration, we can look and look deeply into the nature of things. In our case, the nature of a feeling. And if we keep looking deeply into that concentration, our anger will have to open itself for us to see. It cannot resist. It's like the flower vis-a-vis the sun. For instance, when you grow lettuce, and if the lettuce does not grow well, you don't blame the lettuce. You don't blame lettuce. You know that you have not taken good care of the lettuce. That is why they don't grow as you wish. But the people who live with you in the family, they are not very different from lettuces. If they lack care, loving kindness, they cannot grow well. We are wise enough not to blame the lettuce, but we have the tendency to blame people. And we know that people are not very different from the lettuce. We ourselves are lettuce plants, and if we are not taken good care of, we cannot grow well. Without love, without understanding, we cannot grow. Every one of us feel that. So if that person says something cruel or does something cruel, there must be a cause why he and she did so. So the first thing is not to get angry, but to breathe. To breathe in and breathe out and accepting the fact. And ask why it's like that. Why he did like that. Why he said things like that. And if you have the capacity of breathing, smiling, and looking at the person, trying to understand, that is a very big step you can make. There is a Chinese mother, the mother of Mencius. Her husband was already dead, so she practiced weaving in order to bring his child up, a little boy. One day, the little boy came home talking like a delinquent child. She was very sad because she had great hope about him. But she did not say anything. She just breathed and asked the question, why? She did not blame the boy. She did not punish him. She did not argue with him. She just breathed and asked herself why. And then a few hours later, she found out that she has not chosen the right neighborhood to settle because there is no school in the neighborhood. The only delinquent children left like that. Her child has been exposed to that kind of behavior, talking. So she didn't do anything. She continued practicing weaving for 3 months. To earn enough money in order to move to another neighborhood. And after that, her child became a different child. So she knows how to grow lettuce. She has one lettuce plant. And as she saw the state of her lettuce, she knows that she is not a very good lettuce grower. So she breathed and she found out. And that is what I call enlightenment. After a few hours of breathing and looking, she found the reason. And that is called enlightenment. And because of that understanding, she continued to love him and to have great hope in him. The same can be applied to the people who live with us. If a person said things like that and did things like that, there must be a reason. And therefore, meditation comes into the scene. And if we continue to practice like that, we'll be able to see very deeply. You have heard about the sea pirates in the Gulf of Siam. Because both people came to first countries of asylum, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, Philippines. And on their way, they met with sea pirates that robbed them of everything, who killed them, who violated the woman and even very young children. And when you hear the reports about young girls of 12 or 13 years old raped by pirates, you get very angry at them. You might think that if you have a gun, you like to shoot these pirates in order to save the children. But if you look more deeply, you see that shooting the pirate would not help, because the pirate is an effect that has been brought about by many causes. One night I meditated on that and I saw myself as a pirate, non-duality. Suppose 30 years ago I was born in a fishing village near the coast of Thailand, and if I had a drunk father, a mother who knows nothing about raising children, I had no school, I only play with the delinquent children. Then when I grow up and become a ignorant fisherman, I will be drawn into that business of being separated very easily. Life is very hard. And a friend come and tell me that, well, you only need to do once and get a little bit of gold or money, and then your life will be easier, because nobody has taught me to love, to understand. That is why I follow the advice. I became a separate. And if you shoot me, you cannot help me. Because last night or tonight, this very night, there are many hundreds of babies born along the coast of Thailand. And if we do not do anything for them, the economists, the politicians, the educators, and the other living beings, if we don't do anything for them, and then in 25 years, many of these babies born tonight will become sea pirates. This is like that. That is why that is like that. So nobody can claim to be innocent. So a bodhisattva, an enlightened person, when he look at the sea pirate, he can understand and he can love even the sea pirates. I myself, if I was born there with the same conditions, I might have become a sea pirate. So when you see like that, you stop blaming. And you know that the only way is to help. In that case, your anger vis-à-vis the sea pirate will vanish. Concerning our governments, sometimes we get very angry because our governments do not have the kind of policy that we wish they would have in order to bring about reconciliation and peace. We have to practice the same kind of looking. Why they are like that? After government, they behave very much like each other. There are those who say that if I can be in the government, I'll do differently. But I think that is not very likely to happen, because our society is built in such a way that any government could do more or less the same thing. And our degree of awakening, our way of life, is the root of everything. If we know that it is impossible to remove this without removing this, and then the hope to remove only the bombs is naive. To remove only the bombs and retain the rest, that is a very naive hope. Because the bombs are the fruit of the tree. And if we don't look at the tree and the roots, we are going to have more bombs. So anger vis-à-vis the government does not help. anger does not help in any case. Violence always leads to more violence. I talked to you about non-dualistic way of seeing things. When the United States of America began to be involved in Vietnam, it should have seen that nature of non-duality of the world, that the well-being of this side depends on the well-being of the other side. It should have seen that North and South Vietnam belong to the same reality. It could have offered to help South Vietnam and North Vietnam at the same time. It could have done better by negotiating with the Soviet Union in order to collaborate in helping the North and the South. This is because that is. Of course, negotiating in order to help Vietnam in a peaceful way is a difficult thing, but it's not more difficult than fighting a war. I think if being a very powerful nation, America could have talked with the Soviet Union about helping Vietnam, both North and South. A kind of agreement to help Vietnam only with what the Vietnamese need, like more schools, more food, more rural development, to agree that no guns, no arms should be shipped either to the North and to the South. That would be a wiser, a much wiser way of helping. But America was not thinking of helping Vietnam. America was only thinking of protecting herself. That is why that was not real helping. Helping in the deepest sense could only be envisaged in the non-dualistic way. If you say that North Vietnam take the side of the Soviet Union and South Vietnam take the side of America, and then both sides prepare for war, for self-defense, that is already the seeds of war. It has led to that kind of destruction of both the North and the South, and the sufferings continue. Do you know that the bombs still continue to explode, even if the war is ended? Violence always leads to more violence. When America started a war, it was not for Vietnam, it was for America. And when Americans stopped the war and withdraw from Vietnam, it was also for America and not for Vietnam. And you cannot say that you are helping Vietnam in that way. And many of us want to be helped in this way, but you could not understand. Because you are listening to the voice and the things that are suit to your ears. And that is why we were not being helped at all. And both the North and the South got destroyed. And America was so sure of herself, having that complex of being a big power, knowing everything, being able to win any kind of war. You know very well the war in Vietnam was a conflict, not exactly between the Vietnamese people, but between the world ideologies. And not the world ideologies having a war in our country, but all the weapons that we receive both in the North and the South come from the outside. That is the fruit of the way of seeing, the dualistic way of seeing things. And that is why in our meditation practice, we should be able to revise our way of seeing things. That's the basic. I talked to you about the rose, the garbage, the right and the left, the practice time or the non-practice time, all, everything is like that. And the principle of non-duality can be applied to everything. What can you say to a person that has suffered a great deal like that? In order to act, we need some kind of energy. And anger is not the kind of energy that we need in the peace movement. In the communist circle, people are talking of transforming our anger into energy, into force, revolution. But we all know that anger is not a very sane kind of energy. Because with anger, we cannot see clearly the reality. It's only care, loving kindness that can help us to see clearly. And anger is dangerous, especially in our present situation. We have to see that our government and ourselves belong to the same reality. Our government is at one end, and we belong to the other end. This is like this, that is why, that is like that. Are we not worth our government? I think we deserve our government, and our government deserves us. Change in here, in order to have a change in here must take place. And vice versa. That is non-dualistic way of seeing. Let's go back to the rose and the garbage. Well, the Soviet Union, Soviet citizens might think that they are a rose and American citizens are the garbage. The American citizens think of themselves as a rose and the Soviet citizens as the garbage. We want to blame the other side. But in the light of non-duality, interbeing means we cannot be by ourselves. We have to be with others. So I invented the word interbe. We can only interbe with others. We cannot be by our own self. So Russia and America, they both belong to the same reality. This is like this because that is like that. And therefore, the survival of this is conditioned for the survival of that. So only thinking of the survival of half is a naive way of thinking. In order for us to survive, we have to take care of the survival of the other part. It's very clear. When we got back to our fear and our hope, and look at them very carefully, we understand the fear and the hope of a Soviet citizen. It's like when we look into the garbage can, we can see the rose, and when we look at the rose, we can see the garbage. Things inter-are. The same thing can be applied to the third world. The suffering, the poverty of the third world is linked with the wealth in the first world. If the rose is made of non-rose elements like garbage, and the garbage is made of non-garbage elements like rose, and then wealth is made of poverty, and poverty is made of wealth. And if we don't see that, very soon we have to suffer. If the third world cannot survive, and then the first world will not be able to survive. It's like the trees. You ask a question about nature and war. We all know that in our former lives we were trees. and it continues to be trees. Now, without trees, we cannot survive. But the trees are now begin to die. Millions of hectares of forest land have been destroyed by acid rain. We know that if trees cannot survive, humans are not going to survive very long. The best thing a tree can do is to be a real tree. You agree? The best thing a tree can do is to be a real tree. If a tree is less than a tree, and then we will get into trouble, all of us, all species. But the trees now have begun to be less than trees, because humans, we are less than human beings. We are irresponsible. We are exploiting nature to the degree that nature cannot be nature. Because of our automobiles, of our factories, of our tendency to exploit as much as we can, then the trees now have become less than a tree. It's very alarming. This is like this, that is why that is like that. We are like this, that is why the trees are like that. And if the trees are like that, we are going to be like that too. Everything is like that. We inter-are not only with other human beings, but we inter-are with the trees and with the rivers, with the air. I have a hermitage in France. It was south of Paris, about 2 hours drive. One day I left the hermitage and went to the wood nearby to spend my day. I opened all the windows and let the sun shine in. When I got back to the hermitage, it was very unpleasant. It was dark, cold, the wind was blowing, and all the sheets of paper I put on my desk were blown over, scattered all over. The first thing I did is to close the windows and the doors. The second thing I did is to strike a match and light a lamp. The third thing I did is to make a fire in the fireplace. And the last thing I did is to pick up the sheets of papers and make a pile on the desk. And I sat down near the fireplace. About half an hour after, the hermitage became pleasant again, cozy and bright and very pleasant. I sit in the hermitage and I listen to the wind and the trees outside. They were very real to me, both the hermitage and the wind and the wood. It was unheal. During our daily life, sometimes we feel cold, empty, miserable, like my hermitage that evening. We are exposed to everything in society, and we are less than ourselves. And any attempt to make connection with nature, with humans, do not succeed. We cannot warm us up. So the best thing is to close the windows and to make a fire within yourself. And this can be done by practicing conscious breathing and smiling. That is what we learn in the Sutra of On Breathing. The Sutra on Breathing is a very early text on Buddhist meditation that the monks and the nuns of the time of the Buddha learned by heart. The Buddha presented 16 ways of breathing. 4 ways dealing with your body, 4 ways dealing with your feelings, 4 ways dealing with your mind, and 4 ways dealing with the objects of your mind. That means the flower, the table, the mountain, because everything is the object of your consciousness. When you practice conscious breathing, you only pay attention to your breathing. You cut off all thinking. You also cut off all longing, to the past and all worries concerning the future, you go back and you be one only with your breathing. Breathing in, I know that I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know that I am breathing out. Breathing in, I smile. Breathing out, I smile. Like that. It is a very simple exercise. If you want to try Buddhist meditation, you have to study that sutra, Anapanasati Sutta, available in English already. Together with another text on meditation, the Satipatthana Sutta, the sutra on the four foundations of mindfulness. These two texts are the earliest texts on Buddhist meditation that was used in the time of the Buddha. And if you study one text, you understand better the other text, and vice versa. I very strongly recommend these two texts to you. And the teaching is very simple, very easy to follow. The first function of conscious breathing is you get back to the present moment. Because in your daily life, your mind is always wandering either to the past or to the future. And we tend to sacrifice our present moment for the sake of the future. In reality, life can be only contained in the present moment. And if you lose the present moment, you lose life. Someone said that humans are capable of making preparations to live, but not to live. And we worry all our life about our future. And therefore, conscious breathing brings you back to the present moment in order to be alive in the present moment, to get in touch. If you want to really see a flower, you should be really in the present moment, because only in the present moment that you can meet a flower. And if you breathe and look at the flower, breathing in, I see the flower, breathing out, you see the flower. And you maintain the awareness of seeing the flowers as long as you wish. If you don't maintain your conscious breathing, the flower can vanish, because your mind will be with the past, with the future, and with something else, with a thought. That is why you washing your dishes. You should not think of the coffee you are going to have when you finish. Because washing dishes can be a very pleasant thing if you know how to do it. And with conscious breathing and smiling and washing dishes, the task becomes much more pleasant, much more pleasant. And you enjoy it. Wash a bowl or a plate carefully, joyfully, as if you give the baby Buddha a bath. Why not? And you bring joy to your life, to every minute of your life. You see a tangerine. There are many ways of eating a tangerine. There was a young man to whom I offered three tangerines, and he ate them while talking about his projects. He peeled a tangerine and throw sections of tangerine in his mouth and eat unconsciously while thinking only of his exciting projects. I was there, present. I looked at him eating his tangerines. I thought that, well, I was wasting my tangerine. He has already eaten two tangerines. There is only one left. So I said, "Jim, stop. It's your tangerine." So he stopped. He's an intelligent person. He stopped talking. He breathed. He peeled off the tangerine. Smell nice. Slowly, slowly. All his attention, taking one section, look at it, put it in his mouth, feel the juice coming out on his tongue. Eat slowly. And then take another section, and he ate his tangerine in that way. The tangerine became real, and the person who ate the tangerine became real also. And after he ate that third one, probably I said, good, because I did not lose that tangerine. When you drink a cup of coffee, you breathe on the coffee, you smile, and you make the coffee become real. And it can be real only in the present moment, like the flower. So conscious breathing makes everything real. When you hug someone, if you practice conscious breathing, that someone becomes very real and you'll be much happier. Hugging is a Western practice. We don't practice hugging very much in Asian countries because we are shy. But many of us have learned hugging. We would like to contribute the breathing into the hugging. And we have tried and we see that it's wonderful because you can multiply your happiness by 10 or 20 times by hugging and breathing. Breathing in, I'm really hugging him. He's real. Please try it. Maybe we can try it later tonight. So the tangerine is like that. Try to eat the tangerine like this. Have a tangerine on your palm. Breathe to make it real. See the tangerine as a flower with the sunshine and the rain on it, and the tiny fruit, and then the bigger fruit, the color. And you see how wonderful a tangerine is. You have to be in touch with the wonders of life. And the wonders of life are everywhere around yourself and within yourself. But because you are possessed by our worries, our anxieties, our thinking, we lose life. We lose the wonders of life. We not only lose the flower, we lose also the blue sky, the clouds, the clear river, the tangerines, the little child. We lose everything. And one of the ways to have them back again is to go back to the present moment with conscious breathing. It's wonderful, the sutra of conscious breathing. The second function of conscious breathing is to stop the thinking. Because most of the time, we think too much. And when we think, we are only the thinking. But the thinking may not be the best. Being with the flower, being with your breathing, being with your smiling, being with the char, being with the blue sky is much more than thinking. And sometimes we cannot stop our thinking. Like when we leave a TV set on for a long time, it gets very hot. So when we think a lot, our head becomes very hot. And we want to stop it, but there is no button. So we go to a doctor for drugs in order to stop our thinking or to sleep. But this is not very safe way because even when we sleep, we continue our thinking and having nightmare, and we get addicted to the drugs as we use them too much. But practice conscious breathing and smiling, you turn off your thinking easily. And if you practice like that for 10 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes, you already become different. Without thinking, being only with the breathing and the smiling, and in touch, getting in touch with the wonders of life, you get renewed very quickly. You know that a flower, when it cannot communicate with the water in the pot, it wither, become tired. So if you want to save the flower, you dip the stem of the flower into the water and you cut it again. And now the cells are fresh, the water entered, and then now communication is restored between the water and the flower. You put it again in the pot, and a few hours later, the flower blooms again. Each of us is a flower of humanity. A human is a flower. And if you are not smiling, then something is wrong. You have to save yourself. You have to be in touch with the water of life in order to be refreshed and smiling like a flower. If there are people in your family that are not flowering, and then help them. Because something is preventing them from being in touch with real life. It's like the dry cell of the flower prevent the flower to be in touch with the water. So practice conscious breathing. You have a chance to be in touch with the wonders of life again, because they are all in the present moment. They can only be found in the present moment. And then stopping the thinking is also an opportunity for you to be in touch, because with the thinking is something that blocks the way of communication. When you look at the moon, you can either see it or not see it. If you don't see it, because there is an obstacle. That obstacle might be your thinking, your worries, your anxieties, and your being not in the present moment. So you remove that, and you are in touch with the moon. It's wonderful. Are you in touch with your eyes? It's funny to question. But sometimes we are not in touch with our body. Sometimes we hate our body, and we have to make friends to re-establish a good relationship with our body again. You know that a person who has become blind suffers very much. She thinks that she is in hell now, as she is not capable of seeing things. If you ask whether she had or he had the opportunity to look really at anything deeply, he would say, no, I did not have really a chance to look at anything really carefully. Did you look at the blue sky carefully? No. Did you look at the moon carefully? No. Did you look at your baby carefully? No. Now it's too late. And she thinks that she would be the happiest person on earth if she recovered her sight. She is honest. If someone can help her restore her sight, she'll be very happy. She spent days and hours looking at everything. But maybe a few months later, she falls again into forgetfulness and do not realize that having good eyes is a wonderful thing. All of us have good eyes, capable of seeing all forms, all colors, and we always complain that we are not happy. The only fact that we have good eyes is already a very deep source of happiness. And we not only have eyes, but we have other things. We have our body, our hand. You know that putting your hand on the hand of a child in mindfulness, really get a feel of it, is a wonderful thing. Even if you put your hand on your face in mindfulness, realizing the contact is a wonderful. Because this hand is not only your hand. It has been handed down by several generations. Yeah. It is also your mother's hand. If you want your mother to put her hand on yourself, you just put try it. And you can feel her love. So just being aware of how wonderful things are. And then you'll be nourished by that wonderful feeling of being alive. And this is a very wonderful way of renewing yourself and counterbalancing the sufferings that you have to endure. You have your anxiety, your fear, your anger. And these are burning flames, burning you, make you suffer. And then you don't have contact with the real wonders of life. That is why in the river of feelings, you only have unpleasant feelings. Life is both dreadful and wonderful. And if we are only in touch with the dreadful side of life, we suffer. Suffering is not enough. We have to nourish ourselves with these wonderful feelings that are born out of our real contact with the wonders of life. Like breathing. Breathing is a wonderful thing. And if you practice, you enjoy your breathing. You don't need to go to Los Angeles and go back here in order to realize that breathing here is a better. The air here is better than the air in Los Angeles. You should be aware of the fact that happiness is available. Only our capacity of being happy is in question. When we are able to renew ourselves, everything will become new again. There is a Zen master in Vietnam who lived in the 13th century. One day he used a phrase that had been used by another master to answer a question. And the student told him, "Why do you use that old device?" He smiled and he said, "Every time I pick it up, it becomes new again." And that is true. And how do we renew ourselves? By going back to myself. With conscious breathing and smiling, I make a feel of myself. The Buddha taught a sutra called the Sutra of Ideal Solitude. He said that ideal solitude is to go back to the present moment. Do not be attached to the past. Do not worry about the future. The past is no longer there, the future is not yet there. The intelligent person dwells peacefully and with stability in the present moment. That is the conclusion of that sutra. So first we think that we cut ourselves off from the world. But it is not true. That is the only way in order to be in real touch with the world. If you are less than yourself, and then no meaningful relationship can be obtained between you and another person or a tree. Well, if you are not quite yourself, and if you look at the flower, you cannot see the flower clearly, the flower will not reveal herself to you completely. The moon also. If you are really yourself, and then the moon will smile at you and reveal herself to you completely. That is applied to everything. If you have a friend, and if you are not quite yourself, your friend cannot be seen completely by you. So going back to you means to have the basic condition to have meaningful relationship with the world, and therefore have an appointment with yourself. This afternoon, if you are not really yourself, and if you have someone who asks to see you, an appointment, you say, "Well, no, I cannot see you because I have an appointment." And if that is an appointment with yourself, that is the correct thing to do, because this is the kind of best appointment you might have. You have that appointment with yourself in order to be really yourself, and then any kind of appointment will be meaningful after that. And by being yourself, by being in touch with the wonders of life, you become more peaceful. You know how to deal with your anger, your frustration, your worries. And only by establishing peace in yourself that you can be helpful in contributing to peace. As I said before, the best thing a tree can do is to be a real tree. The best thing a human being can do is to be a real human being. And that is the basic condition for peace. If a tree is less than a tree, I said, then all of us could be in trouble. If a human being is less than a human being, and then every species will be in trouble. So that is why to be oneself, to be happy, to be smiling, to be kind with other people, is the strongest base for peace. Otherwise, being less than oneself, everything one does for peace will only create more trouble. That is why being peace is the base for doing peace, making peace. That is why I consider to grow lettuce in peace, to eat a tangerine in peace, to breathe in peace, to smile, is the basic action for peace. And that you can do at any time in your daily life. I believe strongly that a person that is not happy cannot work for peace. And happiness does not need a lot of conditions. Happiness is there, only our capacity of enjoying it is in question. Last month I led a retreat in San Francisco. The retreat lasted 5 or 6 days. And at the end of the retreat, everyone submitted a poem telling his or her insight or feeling. I remember that there is a poem beginning with two lines like this. I have lost my smile, but the dandelion still has it. I thought that these two lines are interesting enough, so I did not listen to the rest. I thought that if a person has lost his smile but is still capable of seeing that the dandelion still has it, his situation is not too bad. Because he still has the capacity of being in touch with the dandelion. And in fact, everything, everyone is keeping our smile for us. The trees, the moon, the cloud, the river, the flowers, all are there supporting us, keeping our smile there for us. And if you lose your smile, be sure to remember to breathe, to go back to your present moment in order to be in touch with the flower, with the moon, with the river, with the cloud, in order to get your smile back. It can be done very quickly.
Cửa tung đôi cánh khép, một mũi tên sáng loáng lìa dây cung.
This concludes session one of Peacemaking with Thich Nhat Hanh. Our program continues with session two.
Lao vút tới mặt trời nổ tung đầy sao.